Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today I have a dear friend back, Phuc Mập. Although now I feel a little bit weird calling you that now because you're not Phuc Mập anymore. It's more like Phuc Đô, hala Phuc Bự, hala. Like we gotta figure that out.
Huh? It was very interesting. I haven't picked a name yet, but going around Marian Days, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in tonight's podcast, the number of names people tried to assign me or give me, you know, people I'd met before, people who had only seen me online, like you said, Phuc Đô, Phuc Vừa, Phuc Nhỏ, Phuc Gầy, Phuc Ốm, so many different, you know, ways I was addressed. And, you know, I'm thankful some people notice.
How do you feel? What do you want to hear?
It's a good question. I feel like Phuc Đô isn't really Kim Tôn, you know, it's not really humble.
Is it okay if we gave it to you, the world gave it to you, and you didn't give it to yourself, you know?
Of course. But in the end, I really like the name Phuc Mập. It's what I've heard since 2015. So it's really hard to make that switch in my head. Sure, maybe I've done enough to deserve a name change, Đổi Tên, if you will. But to be honest with you, I still like Phuc Mập because I never saw it as an insult. I never saw it as degrading.
You know, maybe we don't say Phuc Đô as, you know, something that you don't need to be humble about, because if you can just say Phuc Đô La, you know, yeah. The Vietnamese, we say Phuc Đô, yeah, Phuc Đô La.
Okay,
it becomes
I like
a different thing, yeah.
I like that. I'm pretty satisfied with Phuc Mập. I have it tattooed on my side, so I don't see myself changing it anytime soon. But it is, you know, really great to hear people who have only seen me online or haven't seen me since 2 years ago at Marian Days to give the compliment. So always happy to receive a compliment. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I was really looking forward to this because, you know, I apologize for not going with you to Marian Days. And we're going to really get into this because this is why we're here. I just got so busy with work and, you know, I do want to go and I have kids and it's just such a huge commitment to leave them and go out there to cover Marian Days.
It's a family event.
Yeah. I brought them 2 years ago and it's hard because they're young and it's hot and there's nothing for them. And for you and I, it's a lot of interesting things that you're just, when you observe it, we're going to get into this. So let's talk, both of us, find a way to share a way to talk about Marian Days in the beginning, just to open up to the audience what the, I'll probably give a brief overview, but I would love for you to come in as well anytime to sprinkle your Phuc Mập, you know, fairy dust into the story, because I know it from many generations ago, but I haven't been a part of it and aligned with it as much as you have in the recent years. So Marian Days, as I understand it, is what in Vietnamese we call Đại Hội Thánh Mẫu, which is like the Coachella for the Mother of God in the Vietnamese culture. Like, this is where 100,000 Vietnamese people go out into, I mean, it's like in the middle of America, Carthage, Missouri. And the group of priests, Nhà Dòng Đồng Công, I don't know what that translates to in English.
I'm actually really bad with a religious vocabulary in Vietnamese. I actually went to my first Vietnamese Catholic church this last weekend. I was the MC for a wedding in Portland, and they invited me to the actual reception at the church. And, you know, I grew up Protestant, but I'd never been in a Catholic church, and I've definitely never been to a Vietnamese Catholic church. So I'm listening to him as he's giving his speech, and I was like, okay, I'm getting this word. I got that word. Don't know that one. So it is a whole new set of vocabulary.
The lexicon's out there. So the priests are Nhà Dòng Đồng Công, and the priests, I think they landed in that part of the world, and some Catholic gave that, like, I think there's like some ungodly amount of acreage to this order of Vietnamese priests that came from Vietnam in 75. And I think they started up in 77. And people started to come visit the priests because they put on an event for the weekend. And in the early days in the 70s, when you had all of these people who are, you know, coming from Vietnam who didn't have a sort of a meeting place, this was the place. And then it slowly grew into this big pilgrimage for Catholics and now non-Catholics. It is a wonderful place that people go camping for a few days, 3-4 days, I think, and 100,000 people in this
Even longer, because, you know, to touch on two things you said, one with the, you know, ton of acreage, they just, one of my buddies there explained to me, they just got more since the last 2 years since I was there. So he took me in his golf cart all the way out to the edge. And it just goes on. And 3 to 4 days for the actual event, yes. But people get there 3 weeks early because it's first come, first serve on spots.
3 weeks.
Yeah, so they'll be getting there weeks before. And I've met a number of people from 2 years ago and then, you know, reunited with them this year. They actually have purchased houses in the town to be at so they don't have to worry about a camp or anything.
Unbelievable. And you know, if I was to put a magic number on it, people in America, and I'm not even talking about like regular people, but Vietnamese Americans in America, I would venture to say maybe, I'm just throwing a wild number out there, maybe 20% of us know about this thing.
Oh, yeah. And being maybe so deep in the Vietnamese culture, I remember 2 years ago when someone told me about it, I said, well, I've never heard of that. What is it? And they gave me a breakdown and I said, well, that's probably worth an 8-hour drive. I better check it out. And I'm so glad I found it because this time, this year, I drove out again. So,
so it's your second year?
Second time going. Yeah, I went 2 years ago and then went back this year.
You know, there's a magical feeling at Marian Days because you know that the town is shut down. The whole area is shut down in a way that's organized and the white people around town understand what's going on. Walmart is full of Vietnamese people in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. And the surrounding cities as well. Joplin and Carthage. You know, just everything around mm-hmm. that area.
It is a special thing that somebody needs to make a really thorough documentary about the place because, you know, after 50 years or I don't know, 48 years now, it is still going very strong. And so let's talk about it. 3 weeks before the weekend starts, it's usually the second week of August, right?
Yeah. So it was the 6th through the 8th, if I'm not mistaken, off the top of my head. And to be honest, you know, I might have told you the last time we did a podcast, but, you know, my wife is very open to me traveling by myself. And she said, nya nya, đi làm việc, kiếm tiền, mua sữa cho vợ, vạc on. You know, I can go anywhere. I can go every week. But I need to be doing a business trip. I can't just go for fun and leave the family. And I don't want to do that either. So this summer, I've literally been in a different city every single weekend. And the way I worked this out was I ended up getting a sponsorship in Kansas City with a Vietnamese cafe, the first Vietnamese cafe in Kansas City. And then I used that as a springboard. I drove to Kansas City 7.5 hours. And then I drove down to Carthage the day after, 2 hours down, and then drove back from there.
Now, tell me what it's like for you to go into Đại hội Thánh Mẫu.
It's everything I love about Vietnam, but over here. And I can display this on my video. For example, 2 years ago, the first video is the drive over. And when I get there on Thursday night, yeah, I think it was Thursday night, and or no, it was Wednesday night. And as I'm walking right into the tents, people just start inviting me in the tents. They say, hey, Phuc Mop, how you doing? My, come inside, check this out. They explain everything to me. And it's like, here, take a picture with my kids, hang out with us. Oh, would you like a beer? Would you like this? Like, it's literally just like Vietnam, because I'm one of the only Nguyen Nguyen Ngoai, and everybody's so hospitable and friendly. And you'll see when I put out the video from this year, I'm walking from my car the first day. I turn the camera on, and as soon as I get there, Phuc Ma, where'd you come from? What are you doing here? Hey. And it's just literally from the road going all the way to where they serve the food. I'm taking pictures. I'm shaking hands, saying hi to everybody. And it's such a hospitable and friendly environment that it just, it's almost like it transports me over to Vietnam.
Your magic of experiencing that is a reciprocal sort of feedback loop, because people know who you are, and you know that you speaking Vietnamese is such a charming thing for this sort of fishbowl of 100,000 people, 100,000 Vietnamese people. And I don't know if most know you, but a lot know you.
And I feel that way. And I say that again as humbly as possible, but you can watch the videos. I will tell you, this year, I didn't even make a good video. I couldn't make a good video because the whole time as I'm walking with my camera, trying to get a thought process going, trying to get a storyline going, hey, Phuc Ma, to Wendocom, of course, you know, I'm happy to talk to everybody and take pictures with everyone. And you'll see in the video, it's almost going to look like I just made it to look at all the pictures I could take with people. Like, it comes up in every video, but especially in Marion days where I couldn't get a second to, hey, look at this food. Even at one point, one of the fathers at the church is my buddy now, Father Benedict. And he's like, here, come eat some banh cuốn with me. And then I'm going to take you here and there. And we sit down and I can't even eat my banh cuốn. Everybody comes up to the table to take a picture. But I have the personality. I'm the kind of person where I don't get annoyed from that. I think it's great, and I'm just appreciative that people like my content and like me enough. It's one thing to get recognized, but to get recognized and then have people actually come up and say, hey, thank you for what you do, that's another level. There's a lot of people recognized because people don't like them.
No, I was with you in Orange County, and you know, just watching you be so graceful with Vietnamese people, and you know, they asked for pictures, they asked for... I mean, it's like the equivalent of modern day autographs, right? Mm-hmm. To take a selfie with them and to spend time with them. And you so graciously oblige. And I think that that's such a special thing. And, you know, when you get to be around a group of people in Carthage, Missouri, in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of America, and there's such a deep, dense population of Vietnam. I mean, it's probably the most densely populated event outside of, I mean, Little Saigon on a parade day, you know?
In terms of Vietnamese, for sure. I can't imagine. If there is one, I haven't heard of it, but I'd like to go. But I can't imagine another event in America other than, like you said, Little Saigon during Thut or something like that. And I'm just happy to be a part of it. It is a bit inconvenient, you know, but I'm pretty good with the road trips now, so...
There was a lot of couples when I was growing up that met at Marion Days. A lot of people, I'm sure, in the history of Marion Days and getting married, met at Marion Days. I mean, people from all over the Midwest and the East Coast who didn't live in Vietnamese communities would wait for that weekend to go to Marion Days. It meant so much to people who are not coming from LA or Orange County, San Jose, all the major cities on the West Coast. People from Dallas or people from Chicago would drive down because it was so close to them, Ohio, Pennsylvania. They would all go to Marion Days, and it was such a place to meet young people, and couples would bind there. It was so magical, and especially at night when it's hot and you walk in, you know, and there's still a buzz on the streets. People are still out late at night.
Yeah. And I mean, look at it like this, you know, as you mentioned with smaller cities. 2 years ago, this lady came up to me. She said, Phuc Ma. And, you know, I just, hey, how you doing? She said, Nhớ cô ham. I said, yeah, tất nhiên là nhớ. Like, I took me a second. I'm sitting there going through my, Rolodex. Yeah. And it turns out I made a video randomly at her nail salon in my hometown of New Smyrna Beach. in 2020, so 4 years before, a tiny little nail salon in a tiny town in Florida, and she was there and saw me, and 4 years later, and I remember because I interview her in her nail salon in her video while my brother's getting a pedicure, and it's like, wow, we just meet again. In Missouri, Bang Ting Viet La, call you in Gap Lai, you know, mm-hmm. we had fate to meet again, right in the middle of Missouri. And the same thing, Nail Techs in Kentucky. The owner of Beauty Depot in Houston is a big fan, and I featured him in my video in Houston in 2023. Saw him 2 years ago, and I saw him again this year. And it's like so great to reunite. This is like, hey, how's your family? Like I talked to his daughter, talked to his wife. He just had a grandbaby, like sharing pictures. And it's just, you know, the big thing about the pilgrimage to me, it's like a giant family reunion. Yeah. And I felt that this time around because I saw so many familiar faces from 2 years ago.
You know, what about the God element, the spiritual element there? Is there, did you go to any of the services? Are you particularly religious at all or not really? You're a secular man and you stay away from that kind of stuff? I mean, tell me about that experience.
I grew up Protestant. I would say Baptist, but all my Baptist churches growing up became non-denominational. So I think that's the trend now. But I, you know, as I said earlier, I've never actually been in a Catholic church for a service, especially a Vietnamese one, but they had one outside. And Father Benedict explained a lot to me with that, where it's they have a, I don't want to get the term wrong, but it's sort of like a traveling Mother Mary. And they have it there, one of eight in the whole world, and they bring it to that event. I think it's great to see, even though I'm not Catholic and not Vietnamese, if you couldn't tell, but I think it is great to see everybody coming together and gathering around with their faith, you know, and just having that as like a center point. And a lot of people have expressed to me that they've seen miracles happen because of that. And coincidence or not, you know, one of my buddies, his daughter got pregnant right before they went and they'd been trying for a very long time. The father explained that they had someone who was possessed years prior and then ended up getting a successful exorcism with all of the fathers there. You know, it just... story after story from people. So I really respect what they're doing, you know, regardless of the fact that I'm not Catholic.
Yeah. Respect for what they're doing. It is a profound thing and it's so difficult to imagine what they are doing. These priests, what it takes to organize. And, I think we got to find a way to get these guys on camera and see if we can podcasts, you know, I think that their story is so worth the world, even Vietnamese Americans, to get to really know. You know, it would be cool to like eventually have a Marian Days, but like with the secular side of it, where if these priests were down for it, that we would be able to like show up in mass and, you know, have food vendors and, you know, really entertainment like a Coachella and, you know, then we can all be kind of closer to God, you know, like we can find a way back to God and have a reason to really congregate. And
well, I feel like, you know, from what I see in the event, regardless of the fact that, you know, probably 90 to 95%, in my opinion, this is just a guess, but are Catholic or coming from a Catholic background. I feel like it's kind of open for that because the service side is over by the church outside and whatnot. But on the other side with the food, they have the food vendors and they have people hanging out, singing karaoke. You know, if you take the golf cart, my buddy, Vo Map, I met him 2 years ago and he's just the nicest guy from Texas. Him and his wife did nails. He's retired now and he comes weeks early, sets everything up and he sets up this whole restaurant called Yesu Wan and they have some of the best food there. They had bột chiên. They always have bò lá lốt. They have different kinds of gỏi, just a variety of food. But his whole thing is all the money they earn goes to the poor in Vietnam. Now, I know I'm getting off topic, but the point is he takes me around and shows me. And then that not secular community, but what could be secular for some people who are not as close to God or in the Catholic religion, you could pick any of those campers for half a mile and have what is known as like a Vietnamese party, singing karaoke in the day, everybody just getting along and doing their thing, you know?
Yeah, I talked to Jenny and Vu from Quoc Song Ye, the RV life kind of. Okay. It's slipping my mind right now, but I had them on the podcast this morning, and they were also at Marion Days, but they're like professional RV people, and they were telling me about, you know, pulling into the premises of Dai Hoi Tan Mao. And when you're set up like them and you have like this big RV, you know, monster RV, and you have AC and everything's blowing and you got proper kitchen, proper food, for me, that would be like that is like the ultimate way to spend 3 weeks. Like I would go early.
Of course. They have an area, Vomap actually shows me this, and it's featured in my video from 2 years ago. We drive through, he said, this is Phu My Hung. Are you familiar with Phu My Hung in District 7?
District 7, yeah.
He goes, this is Phu My Hung of Dai Hoi Tan Mao. And he shows me these campers. He goes, this one's over a million. This one, a couple hundred thousand. And they have some legitimate RVs. Maybe I saw theirs. I don't know, but they had some of the biggest RVs I've ever seen.
So how does that even happen? Like, wait a minute. Like, why would the Catholic Church split up the
people? It's just where they like to park. You know, it's not splitting up per se. It's just these bigger campers were in this area 2 years ago, and they were back again this year. I mean, and it could be because one of the houses, I have on video actually, one of the kids was a fan of mine, and he took me over there to meet him and his family, and he comes running out of the house with his family, and that's right where the campers were. So maybe they park close to where their friends live. I'm just taking a guess, but it's in my older videos, and it'll be in this video as well.
And how do you spend your days at Marion Days? What do you do all day from morning to night, and where do you stay?
I just walk. All right. So I'm literally just on the move the whole time. And I have a sort of funny story, which, you know, relates to the Vietnamese culture that I haven't told you yet. So I told you I went to Kansas City, right? So I get the Kansas City Marriott downtown, super fancy hotel. Didn't pay for it. You know, it's like over $300 a night, but I had some Marriott free nights that were going to expire. So I said, oh, perfect. I'll use it for this collaboration. They have a parking garage that's, you know, closed off under the hotel. I said, great, you know, my van will be safe here. I'll park by the elevator under the camera. And for this Marion Days, I brought my Vietnamese father-in-law's electric bike. I said, boy, cho con mượn xe đạp điện của bố. Con không muốn đi bộ cả ngày tới Đại Hội Thanh Mão. He said, yeah, không sao, folks. So I got his electric bike in the back of my van, excited that I don't have to walk the whole day. And the first night, I come down the next morning, and somebody broke into my van in the parking garage. You believe that? Right under the camera, too.
But did they take anything?
They took the bike.
I was like, man.
And I told the management, I go, it's not the value of the bike that matters. Do you know how long it takes to build a relationship with a Vietnamese father-in-law? Are you serious right now? You guys have a closed off garage and they go, well, we don't know how they got out. I'm like, he didn't put the bike in his pocket. The garage is closed. So he walked up the stairs right in front of your valets with my bike. And then they went through the cameras. We called the police. And 4 a.m, some guy went down. The big thing was, I said, did I lock it? Because I'm very careful about locking my car everywhere. And he said, yes, you turned around and you hit the button and the lights flashed. Somehow that guy opened it up without breaking a window and managed to take the bike. I'm like, well, at least they didn't break the window, you know, especially on a road trip. But anyways, leading up to that, so I didn't have an electric bike at Marion Days. And I get there and I stayed at the same campground that I did last year because a lot of the hotels are booked out. Pretty much all the hotels are booked out early, you know, year in advance or so. And so there's a campground about 3 miles away, and I just park my van and blow up an air mattress and sleep in my van. You know?
And you keep the AC on though, right?
In the car?
Yeah.
No, I actually bring a fan and it has an outlet next to it. So I put an extension cord under the sliding door and then close the door. And then it blows up the air mattress and keeps a fan going in there.
And it's not too hot?
No. No, it's good. I mean, it's definitely hot outside, but it's a good size fan, you know?
You know, when you are walking around all day, you're just not having an agenda. You just walk all day.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine.
I love meeting people. And I just, you can watch in the video. Like it's literally 10 feet, meet somebody. 10 feet, meet somebody. Hey, Footmop, Lindsay Day. I get on somebody's golf cart and they take me around. I get off, I walk. Someone puts me on another golf cart and brings me around. Like it's, and then Father Benedict, you know, he takes me up on the roof. And I don't know how many people get that privilege, but he brings me up to the very peak of the cathedral. I take pictures and video, and he just wants to make my video better. So he, you know, brings me up there. And yeah, it's just, I feel like I get a cool backstage pass almost, yeah. VIP experience, if you will. My buddy Vol, he ended up buying a house right there in Carthage outside the campground. He said, Footmop, where are you staying? You can sleep on my floor. The rest is full, but you can sleep. I'm like, no, I already paid for the campground, but thank you. He's like, next year, let me know. You staying at my house. I was like, I appreciate that. That's great.
That is like a national treasure that Vietnamese America has. And I think that yes. I really implore all Vietnamese Americans to go to Vietnam at least once in their life.
Of course.
And to check out Marian Days once in their life. Because it is a very special thing that has been going on for decades.
And it just keeps getting bigger.
And it keeps getting bigger. And it's like with the age, in the age of social media, we should all know more about this thing. And it's like such a wonderful experience. I keep saying that and I'm like going to beat this like, you know, to death. But I mean, that's why I'm sitting here talking to you today, because I want to hear, you know, what went on, what's new. And they have like, it's like a city, but mm-hmm. there's tents that are set up and it's not like you just go in and it's like a, you know, like an eight seater, I mean, you know, eight tables or even 20 tables. These dining halls are massive.
Yes. And it's crazy because all the stuff inside, the father told me that they have a company who sets up the tents, but all the stuff inside is some church in America who literally transports all of this stuff from Texas, from California, whatever, to set up an entire restaurant. And then the youth group is working as the servers. The older ladies are cooking the bangun and they're selling it. And then they're giving the money to the poor, you know, and it's a really great experience because, you know, you're paying $15 for a thing of bangun, but I guess that's kind of a normal price at restaurants these days, but you know it's going to a good cause. So, and you know this church came from across the country to cook that bangun for you.
This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan, the sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows, the feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Red Boat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together, we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history. These deserve to be preserved exactly as they are, untouched, unfiltered. They're human, so don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com. Back in the day, they would have these the tents, these food tents, but we didn't have cell phones. So you would meet, you know, I was a teenager. So I would meet, you know, my group of guys would meet a group of girls and we'd be like, okay, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, meet us at the tent. And they were smaller. They weren't the size, the mega sizes. But you would go with your crew and you would just wait and you would hang out to see these girls or, you know, like groups of people from church would just go. And then that's how like these unions and these couples would get together. And it was, again, the magic of no cell phones. If anybody in the audience had gone through that, please leave something in the comments, because, you know, it's such a romantic time in my life when I think about, you know, I overly romanticize Dai Hoi Tan Mao and Marian days. But, you know, I do have conflicts with the Catholic Church. You know, internally, there's a lot of things that that doesn't sit well with me. However, the discussion of something like the Marian Day event is sort of a healing thing for me to say, you know what? We don't need to have everything so black and white. We can be, you know, anti this, but still show up for our family. We can be politically this way, but, you know, we should still be able to love our neighbors and be part of our people, Vietnamese descent in Carthage. And I'm sure a lot of them politically are very different from each other, but at the end of the day, there's a magic that is in the congregation of all these Vietnamese faces.
Yeah, we talked about this the last podcast we did, what I think it was around April. And to me, as I mentioned on there, it's like, as a grown man, I know people will have differing opinions from me. And no matter how good my argument may be, I'm not going to convince another grown man to change his mind, as I don't expect them to change mine. But that doesn't mean we can't get along, work together, work on projects, whatnot. And especially when it's something more in common, like a fellow Vietnamese person, you know, Buddhists and Catholics and people from the left and right can get together and, as you said, have a sort of kỷ niệm, like a family reunion or whatnot. At this thing that just keeps growing every year, you know, and to be honest with you, like, I haven't even attended, other than the beginning of the main parade with Mother Mary, I haven't attended a lot of the religious portions of this in the times that I've been there. I'm more just walking around and socializing, you know, and that's what I go touching back on what you said about having sort of secular event. It's like, you really don't even have to be involved with the Catholic portion whatsoever. You can hang out in the separate town of food vendors or trailers and campers and still have a great time and not even realize it's a Catholic event.
I remember years ago when I went, I remember they had, you know, like when you go to a work convention, like you're a doctor and then you go to a convention and you're looking at equipment, but then they have breakout seminars, or you're in the, let's say you're in the car business or you're in the film business. They have these like weekend conventions and you break out and go to like an hour and a half of like, you know, the latest, greatest, whatever, they breakout seminars, and it's listed in the program. I remember my mom saying, oh, I and some of my girlfriends are going to go to a Nha Trai Giảng. You know, we're going to go listen to a priest hold a seminar about, you know, marriage, right? Like how to be healthy in your marriage or how to raise your children. They have these, and I don't know if Dai Hoi Tan Mao has those still to this day. But
I would imagine, I'm not sure.
They were really popular. And I remember going with my mom to a few of them and my dad, and they were like standing room. People were just standing on the, you know, people, you know, maybe 300 seats. And then, you know, around the walls, people were just standing. And they would just have so many of these seminars. And I think that this is what blows my mind still continuously as I'm talking to you this whole time, is like, just a handful of people know that this exists, you know, and it just still blows my mind that as Vietnamese Americans, like we should know, like every one of us should know about this place, just like we know about Phu Lộc Tho, right? We know in Little Saigon in California, there's this like mall, it's like a shrine built to, you know, everybody goes there. But this is even bigger than that.
Yeah, and I'm trying to do my part, because as I always state in sort of my mission, you know, my target, my goal, mục đích, you know, mục tiêu, however you want to put it, with my channel is just to spread, you know, the positive aspects of Vietnamese culture from the eyes of an American. And I try to do my part by sharing the event. I was able to make 4 or 5 videos the last time I went. Won't be as many this time, but still trying to get it out there and people see and they say, oh my goodness. And, you know, even without the videos, even if I wasn't filming, it has become a sort of family reunion for myself because, as I mentioned, people that I met before, you know, there's a guy, his name is Fee. He's a young guy from Hawaii. Would have never met this guy. I don't think I'm ever going to go to Hawaii. But he comes there. He was there 2 years ago, took me around in a golf cart, gave me some free fried chicken, came up with, you know, who's going to turn down fried chicken? And I see him again this year, and I say, hey, Fee, how you been, man? Great to see you. Made it all the way back from Hawaii again. Oh, my goodness. And it just little, you know, meetings and relationships like that. You know, you could see the people who shared my picture on my in their story, and I reshared it. It was like, hey, Fookmop's back. Fookmop's here again. Wow. And it's people that I met times before. So it's become a sort of family reunion for me as well.
And did you see any other influencers or content creators out there that you recognize?
I'm going to try to go through. I can't say that I did this time around, and I feel bad if I talked to somebody and I don't remember it. I told you I had my own run-in 2 years ago where, you know, it's a guy who a lot of people don't like, but, you know, I didn't see him, and I don't remember interviewing on any channels this time around. I may have popped up on some.
Yeah.
For example, one of the milk tea stands, the guy was treating it like an auction. And then, Ban Jesu, he's like, oh, Fookmop, light eye. And then, and he gets me on the mic. And, you know, I'm no stranger on the mic. So I take the mic, and then I'm getting everybody over there. I got this on video, just like, hey, like, and it just becomes a whole thing. And the next thing you know, I look and it's just cameras, you know, whether they know me or not, it's just some white guy speaking Vietnamese on the mic trying to sell milk tea for one of the stands. Like,
that is an incredible story. Do you miss Vietnam?
I really, really miss Vietnam. So much so that I'm going back next month.
And how long are you staying for?
It's kind of undecided, but it's definitely going to be a while. I have to be back by November because I have a wedding to not only MC in Arizona, but this is the first Vietnamese wedding who has asked me to be the officiant as well. So I have to get ordained.
And does your family go back to Vietnam with you?
Yes, this trip they are. Sometimes I go by myself, other times they come, but this time we are going back and we have to... In order to get the first class tickets that I got, we have to go to Japan first. So I want to show my wife Japan for a few days. Her sister's in Taiwan working there. So we're going to Taiwan and then from there to Vietnam, you know, to see family, to make YouTube, to just reconnect and whatnot. Off topic, I don't know if I told you, but I'm starting a second YouTube channel all about credit cards, points, miles, rewards, and shameless plug. Yes, it's shameless what I've plug. Always done anyways, just but shameless plug, I got my wife, my baby, and myself 3 first-class tickets to Japan from America, $15,000 worth of tickets on Delta. And I used points, and the points, I got a flash sale where the seats were the same price as regular seats. So 240,000 points total to get 3 first-class tickets. So we got beds and everything. So that's the whole trip from Japan to Taiwan, points. From Taiwan to Vietnam, points. The hotels, the Airbnbs, points. Vietnam, you know, we stay at my wife's family's house, so nothing there. But yeah, so I am starting that channel here shortly. I already got the domain name and everything else.
What's it called?
The Credit Ginger.
Credit Ginger. I
hear these stories, you know, I follow all the channels and these guys are like, I just started learning about credit card rewards 2 years ago and now I'm doing my own channel. I'm like, buddy, I've been doing this for 15 years. We used to get credit cards and send money back and forth on them just to get the bonus and then move to the next one. We did that in college. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. So it just kind of pairs well with trips back to Vietnam and trips over here where I was in San Jose doing a meet and greet. The flight was on points. The hotel were on points. I mentioned Kansas City Marriott was on points. Just all these trips that I've been taking all summer, the flights, the hotels, I don't have to charge a sort of travel fee on top of the sponsor fee or whatever because I do the points. So why not share my love about it and teach other people about it on a second channel?
I love it. Are you going to do it in Vietnamese or just purely in English?
No. It's going to be all English. I was doing subtitles for my new YouTube video today, and I just shaking my head every time, just going through CapCut and correcting, and I have to do the subtitles, but it's going to feel good to not do subtitles anymore. Mm. And a lot of the cards are not applicable in Vietnam, so it's mainly an audience here in America.
Got it. You know, I do want to ask about this idea of language because I'm sure you probably had to contend with this. And I'm just going to ask publicly because, you know, let's talk shop about a little bit because, and I'm going to give a shameless plug for me. I started a podcast a few months ago and I think we're...
A different podcast.
A different podcast.
Okay.
And this one's called Bao La.
Okay.
For general, for like universal, but it's in Vietnamese and it's with two other hosts, Anh Hoàng Trọng Thủy and Chị Ngọc Lan from Little Saigon TV in Orange County.
Okay.
And we speak entirely in Vietnamese and it's, you know, has its own channel, has its own thing. So audience, please, you know, listeners, if you like, please tune into it. Give us a subscribe, a like. And I have traditionally, first 2-3 years of the Vietnamese podcast, this podcast did it in both languages. If I encountered friends that couldn't speak English, I would do it in Vietnamese and I'd post it. And, you know, I figured that I felt like it really messed up the algorithm and confused the algorithm. But now I want to create another podcast, but it's the Vietnamese. It's a subseries of the Vietnamese on a separate channel and, you know, have a different name for it. I wonder, what is the wisdom? What is the words of wisdom that you can give me in terms of creating an ecosystem that's coherent, but we have two different languages that you and I, we really have to service two different languages. And at the end of the day, you and I are very different in each of our languages, right? Like you and I in English is Kenneth and, you know, Phuc. But then when you go to Phuc Mup and I go to Kenneth in Vietnamese, it becomes two different personas almost, I feel, yeah. Right? And so what's your thoughts on all that?
It's really a tough one that I've juggled for the last couple of years. I mean, I will say adding more English into my overall content has grown my audience in America, which in turn, you earn more ad money from America. But you can't forget where you came from. You can't forget who made you what you are in the first place. And that was Vietnamese and Vietnam. So it's really tough because you're almost alienating a certain part of your audience by not speaking their language. And that goes both ways. I try to find a balance. I try to speak a good bit of Vietnamese in my videos and keep the subtitles opposite of what I'm saying. But I think it comes down to who your final target demographic is, you know? A buddy of mine, I'll share this, Marquise Eats Vietnam. He's a big guy. He's fairly large. And he got on CNBC while living in Vietnam on, I think it's called Make It. And then he started a YouTube channel from there. Great production, great team behind him. But he encountered this where he's like, he had a dubbed version and an English version. And YouTube took away his dub version, so then it messed up all his analytics, and he was talking to me about which way should I go? Should I try to speak my broken Vietnamese? I mean, he's pretty good at Vietnamese, studies a long time, but, you know, it's not fluent. Or should I just go with English? Because either way, I'm going to lose a big part of the audience. So yeah. I think all three of us can relate and agree that it's hard. It's a hard decision to make.
What did he end up doing?
He finally got his dubbed audio back right after we talked. So he's still going with that. I guess there's a feature on YouTube where it will dub over your voice in another language. So by allowing that in Vietnamese, it helps the Vietnamese to understand what he's saying most of the time.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's like an extreme version of, let's say, best ever food review show. I mean, he's eaten the penises of horses. He's eaten the brains of this and that. I mean, he's eaten the craziest, weirdest things that he can. You know, it took me 8 years to eat Thiet Can for the first time, and he's eaten it in like his first four videos. I'm like, more power to you, buddy.
Yeah, I got some beast.
Yeah, so we're hoping to collab when I get back, and hopefully he's keeps the dubbed audio and keeps everything going, and hopefully we can keep that going on there.
You know, when I get this, I'm gonna start this next channel in all Vietnamese, and I'm gonna migrate a lot of the ones that I did in Vietnamese over to the new podcast and keep it going. But I would love to have you come on as a guest, and we just go all in Vietnamese.
That'd be fun. That'd be fun. Funny story on that. I sat down with the owner of Cafe, this lady, Jackie. She actually comes from California, lived in New York.
San Diego, yeah.
Yeah, and then, so you know her?
I ran into her at a gala just recently.
Okay, perfect. She had the idea for her channel, for her social media, that we sit down and do a sort of podcast. And then at the end, we all try to do Vietnamese. And for her and her friend, it was a bit difficult. You know, it's one of those times where I was like, dang, okay, my Vietnamese is decent because I feel like I'm kind of guiding the conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But getting deep into a podcast past, I don't want to say surface level conversations, but I find it the more I know someone, the harder it is to keep the conversation going long term in Vietnamese, you know? Because like we talked about religion, I lack some vocabulary there.
Oh, okay. So wait, do you lack the vocabulary or does the other person lack the vocabulary? Or do both of you?
In this case, they did. And we, you know, the video will be out on my channel around the time of the Marian Days one. In this case, they did, but I feel like I've been on TV shows before. For example, MC Quyen Linh was interviewing me on a show called Yai Ma Ki Tai. It's like deciphering the genius or something, which I didn't find out till after. I was like, oh, that's cool. They called me a genius.
Yeah.
And my wife, she told me before the show, she's backstage. She goes, if you don't understand a question, don't answer it. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then she said a couple times in the show, he asked something and then I, Jaloi Kom Lien Quan, I'm just answering like something random and I didn't understand. So there's been times where we've had deep conversations on TV too, of all places, where I've kind of gone off the rails and think I know what I'm talking about, but a little too overconfident.
But wait a minute. When you say that you think you know what's going on, but aren't you translating in your mind words and you are actually saying real thoughts? So how could it be like a runaway train? I don't get it.
Because I misunderstand the question and I think he says this. I hear some words I understand and then I go a whole different tangent. And I'll give you a perfect example of that. I mentioned before I teach Vietnamese on Patreon and it's at a basic level. It's things that I understand very well, but I've been doing it for 3 years and I have 127 lessons, 130 lessons. I had the opportunity in Portland to meet up with one of my patrons, this guy, Joe. He invited me to go to his gym and we go work out. And I was like, all right, so your wife's Vietnamese, right? He's like, nope. I was like, so you like Vietnamese best friends, right? He's like, no, I just really like Vietnamese. I just want to study. I've been there before working with the government. And, you know, I like your Patreon. I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then we got to go to a place called Bun Bo Huế restaurant. Very creative. And I got to watch him use some of the things that he'd learned on my Patreon speaking Vietnamese to these people. And I bring this up because he says, you know, like you said, you really just need to get the context and then you can answer accordingly. You don't have to understand every word and you don't have to feel discouraged when you don't understand every word. Because that's what I used to teach my IELTS students with English.
But do you believe that? You still believe that?
Believe that you don't have to understand every word? Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because it's kind of like a waiting game. For example, the YouTube channel. If I wait till everything's perfect to start my YouTube channel, I'm never going to start. Well, if I wait till my Vietnamese is perfect to have conversations with people on podcasts or TV, I'm never going to have those conversations. Therefore, since 2019, I've just ran with it. And you can go back and watch my TV show in 2019. It's called Một Ngày Của Phúc Mop, literally One Day With Phúc Mop on HTV9. And my Vietnamese was so elementary compared to what it is now. And they would ask me something, and I'm like, tick, tick, you know? Yes, I like that. I don't know exactly what you said, but I like it, you know? And it's a progression over time, for sure.
You know, what a wonderful philosophy in life is, you know, don't let perfection be the enemy of the good, you know? And I've had dear friends who tell me that. My brother tells me that. And this is the perfect example of not letting perfection kill the progression of becoming better and good. But how do you get better now?
I still sit down with my tutor.
Oh, you're still working it.
Yeah. Now, not as frequently. Oh, I'm going to point that out right there. We just had a lesson last week, but I used to study 1 to 2 times a week with her in the beginning. From 2016 to 2019, that built the whole base of my Vietnamese. And my tutor, who's also named Phi, I mentioned a Phi earlier, she's very fluent in English, obviously fluent in Vietnamese, and she's decent at Chinese. So she's very good at explaining the Han Viet, the Chinese root words. And she breaks things down to me. Like, I've tried other tutors. No one's ever tutored me like she has. She's very good at what she does.
Is she in Vietnam or here?
Yeah, Vietnam. So she teaches Southern Vietnamese. She's got lesson plans and everything else. And we sat down last week to refresh some of my wedding MC things to say, because as my wife always says, they đừng nói bậy at the wedding. You do not want to upset the old people there. So I go over with her and everything.
But you could get away with something, you know, if you made mistakes, because, you know, you're a white guy, right?
Of course. No, and the mistakes are one thing. But like if you get too informal and you got 30 of the bride and groom's family, all the old people sitting right in front of you looking at you. You know, but this particular wedding, some of the groomsmen were cussing up a storm in their speeches in English. And I'm like, I guess I don't have to worry about that. These guys, that's the first wedding I've been to. They're just kind of cussing up a storm. But it was very good. And I got a lot of compliments. So whether they're just being nice or it's getting better, I don't know. We'll see.
You know, that there's a crazy idea when I look at you and I'm like, this ain't no hobby no more. This ain't no like 8-year hobby. And I'm like, I just was interested in building airplanes and I'm going to stop this. This is a lifelong, it's not even a lifestyle anymore. You basically like implanted some genetics into you and you began to grow this tree inside of you that was Vietnamese, and you're becoming that tree instead of, like, you know what I mean? It's like inside of you, and it's not a hobby. This is not work anymore.
No.
This is not...
No.
You've basically become Vietnamese, and there are a few other guys in Vietnam that are like that. There's this other young Vietnamese kid who's from, like, I don't know where he's from in America, but his Vietnamese talks like a, I think he's a gay kid, and he speaks like a woman from the hood. It's not the hood, but like a woman who is, maybe a Tam, you know, in the rural areas. And the speaking is so on point that if you close your eyes, you're like, oh, that's a woman in, you know, in these parts of the Mekong or something.
Mm-hmm. I felt the same way. One of the first people to inspire me to, you know, learn and get better Vietnamese was CJ. He was probably one of the originals, when it comes to foreigners on YouTube speaking Vietnamese. And to this day, he still creates content. And same idea, you close your eyes and you're like, wow, like that sounds like a man straight from Hanoi. But even not, I don't say even more impressive, but what's crazier is Chris Lewis, a ginger kid from Colorado. We used to do a lot of videos together. This kid, I say kid because he's like 28, he speaks fluent Chinese, fluent Vietnamese, close to perfect Urdu. He like taught himself Urdu before he went to Pakistan, learned Hindi. Now he's living in Korea and speaks Korean. He made vlogs in Peru speaking Spanish. I mean, the true definition of a polyglot. And I'm like, I look at him, I'm like, well, I'm trying to get my Vietnamese better, but this guy's working on seven languages at once.
I mean, your other language is social media, right? I mean, yeah. This is a language. Understanding how to put this all together and make it sort of, that's a its own special, unique talent.
Thank you.
It is it's dynamic. And I'm here for it. And a lot of us Vietnamese, you know, we had some people that you had dinner with when you were out in Orange County with us. And some people, you know, don't come from an understanding of like, not all white people are trying to appropriate, you know, the Vietnamese or the black culture or whatever. And I think you proved yourself to be just authentic and loving and want the best for the people around you. And it's, you know, regardless of who or what we look like, you know, you just have this deep love for the Vietnamese people.
Yeah, and I told them that, where I feel like, of course, from the outside looking in, if you just stumble upon my page and you go, who's this guy trying to be Vietnamese and just appropriating, as you say, yeah, of course, it can look like that. And I fully admit that. But then when, you know, we do a podcast like we did, and you hear the story from the start, and as you were saying, when you say you've almost become Vietnamese, I feel that way in that this whole journey is like a never-ending, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just a never-ending journey, if you will, to please my wife's family and, of course, make my wife proud. Where it's like, I told my brother-in-law in the beginning, before all this blew up, I said, if I make a YouTube channel in Vietnam, everyone's going to know who I am. I'm going to make it. I'm going to go so hard and make some ridiculous videos, if that's what it takes, that everyone in Vietnam, they might not all like me. They might not be a fan, but they're going to go, ah, fuck my I know him. You know, it's like, and I feel, you know, experiencing traveling around the country this summer, and obviously, you know, whenever I'm in Vietnam, but like the amount of people who come up and thank me for teaching Vietnamese or doing what I do or helping the culture, I feel like I'm almost there. I think there's still more to go, but I'm almost there. And it's just natural because I'm doing this right alongside my wife. I'm speaking Vietnamese to my wife every day. I'm speaking Vietnamese to her family. When I'm in Kentucky, I'm at the nail salon speaking Vietnamese to everybody. Like, it's just day to day, you know?
Yeah, you're living in the trenches with the rest of the Vietnamese community all around the U.S. And it's such a beautiful thing. And, you know, Marian days, you know, like coming back to like share that with our community and our audience and, you know, being a part of that and describing the things that were going on is like, it's ironic that I'm not speaking to a Vietnamese person about Marian days, but I did this morning, you know, with Jenny and Vu, but, you know, here we are, you know, thank you so much. And, I hope that, you know, by the time, you know, you're in Vietnam, maybe we could pick it up again. And cause these are a lot of fun and, you know, to hear you, you know, break down certain things, it's a real treat.
You know, and this is what I always say about collaborations. I've done quite a few. It's like, this is a mutual benefit. You know what I mean? You have a podcast that's helping Vietnamese learn about different stories in the Vietnamese culture. And I'm just proud to have worked and done enough to where I can be one of those stories. And this is the third time on the pod. So I appreciate you having me back on.
We're going to do many, many more. I mean, this is what it's all about. This is fun. Thanks a lot, Phuc. I appreciate you so much. Have a wonderful evening and get some rest.
Yes, sir. Thank you. We'll talk soon because I think I'm coming back to California after Vietnam. So
anytime, we're here, you know, open arms, and we'll do more.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, buddy. Have a good night.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.